Still rocking and rolling here on this Friday night edition of Overtime. It's the Youngest in Charge Movement, Linnell Willingham. I'll take you up to 10 o'clock. Number to call the show, 1-800-636-1067. You can tweet at me as well. It is at N-E-L-L underscore BTP. Getting you warmed up for Falcons and Commanders on Sunday, a game with seismic playoff implications. Atlanta still fighting for their life atop the NFC South, and Washington with a win-in-in situation. As we've discussed a couple of different times throughout the show, Washington could already have a postseason spot clinched based on the results of the early window game. We've been talking all things Commanders. Let's go behind enemy lines here momentarily as we go out to the guest hotline. We find one of my absolute favorites, man. Carl, I've been listening to you for years. Our pal Carl Dukes of 92.9 The Game in Atlanta. You probably hear him often on the Infinity Sports Network with the Put 'Em Up. Love you, Carl Dukes, man. You are one of my role models, man. I've never really got the opportunity to share that with you. I know we'd cross paths eventually, but you do the damn thing, brother. I'm a huge fan.
Man, I appreciate that. Big ups. And I love what you're doing up there, man. And as a matter of fact, you know, a friend of yours and I were just talking at the Army-Navy game about you. So small world, brother, but appreciate you having me on.
For sure, man. You're probably talking about that caged animal, Chris Russell. I know who you're talking about.
Absolutely.
One of our guys. One of our guys, man. Carl, we brought you on, obviously, to give us the skinny on what to expect out of the Atlanta Falcons. For the casual football fan that hasn't watched very closely, what has gone wrong with Atlanta, a team that you know, Carl, had pretty high expectations coming out of the offseason?
Well, I mean, the thing that's gone wrong was your quarterback deteriorated faster than anybody expected. Nobody expected Kirk Cousins to fall apart this way. And, you know, you went from a team that was 6-3 and on top of the world, leading your division, coasting into the playoffs, to a team that was free-falling and not understanding how to fix it. And so, ultimately, Raheem Morris made the decision, the organization made the decision to make the change to Michael Penix. Now, I'm not telling you Penix is the answer, but the one thing that was wrong with this team was the quarterback play. In a five-game span, you're talking about one touchdown, nine interceptions for Kirk Cousins. So that's what went wrong. You can't turn the ball over in the NFL. You know that. And that's what was their downfall over those 5 or 6 weeks, you know, including the bye. And so they hope that they fix that with Penix being inserted into the starting role. We're going to find out on Sunday because this is his biggest test.
Yeah.
And I think Washington is one of, as you know, and you're seeing them every week. I know Dan Quinn very well. A lot of guys on his staff, Cliff Kingsbury, that they're doing a hell of a job up there. So they're going to be ready, and Penix is going to be tested really for the first time.
And I'm glad you mentioned the deterioration of Kirk Cousins, because it feels like everything that was wrong with this team offensively had to do with his lack of mobility. We know Zach Robinson comes from that Sean McVay tree. They want to run the outside zone stuff. They want to get the quarterback out on the edge with the play action pass stuff. But it feels like, man, and tell me if I'm wrong, like they didn't even trust Cousins to hit the landmark on a stretch play. Like, so the health of him is really been a big factor in this.
Well, we knew starting the season, even though they weren't admitting it, that he would be limited. To what degree, like, now, we didn't know.
Right, yeah.
And then, you know, you start the season and we're in the pistol and we're not running play action. And all of a sudden it's like, what's going on with Kirk Cousins? Is his mobility in question? And then dude throws for 500 yards and everybody's like, he's good.
Yeah.
Nobody questioned it after that. And at times he showed that he could, you know, at least move a little bit. But the reality is this is supposed to be a play-action offense based off of Bijan Robinson and getting guys, you know, open looks down the field. And they never were really able to do that because of Kirk's inability to be mobile this season. And you kind of covered up your warts with his play in some of those games that had people forget about it. Now when you start playing better teams, they're saying, wait a minute, we're coming after him and we want to see how he reacts. And you got a chance to see it firsthand. I mean, he's getting sacked. He's holding onto the ball too long. He's second-guessing himself. And by the way, This has been the worst stretch of Kirk Cousins' life.
Oh, for
like,
sure.
He's never played this bad. So the real question is there something else going on? And I don't know if anybody knows, but he answered that question a couple of weeks ago when the change was made. He said, look, I'm not hurt. I didn't forget how to play football. I'm okay. and he kind of left it out there. So if you're telling me everything's cool, then Lionel, you know what this is? This is a lack of confidence and a mental issue that Kirk Cousins is going through right now. Yeah. And he was hurting the team too much.
I agree with you, man. And it feels like, you know, being around Kirk a little bit, I was way young when he was here in Washington. I wasn't in the media industry yet, is what I will say. But Kirk has always been a guy that, you know, confidence is a big thing with him. Jay Gruden had to sit him down because of the interception problem early in his career. But as we all know, he got over that. He left Washington and secured a big-time deal with the Vikings. And he got another payday this offseason from Atlanta, but clearly the health a big problem. Carl, I want to ask you this. The one thing that I was stunned about when doing my homework for this contest, Atlanta tied for the second most touchdowns allowed through the air with 28. With all of the acquisitions that were made on this defense, do the numbers tell the story of how this group is playing, or have they been handicapped by the offense a little bit, leaving them out to dry?
Well, I think that's part of it. I mean, you're talking about an offense, again, that was turning it over frequently and giving teams short fields. That doesn't help your defense. But I also think that during that stretch of games where they were losing, they didn't turn people over. And last week, for example, you had two pick sixes, one from Judon on a tip ball, Matthew Judon scores, and you saw Jesse Bates take it to the house on a pick six. Now, listen, we all can agree the Giants are terrible. But with that said, it's the element that has been missing on the defensive side while they were in this losing streak. So not only is your quarterback turning the ball over, your defense is not creating turnovers. And I think that has kind of been why those numbers are a little bit skewed. I will tell you, A.J., Terrell is one of the best corners in the league. I think Jesse Bates is an all-pro. And you start saying, all right, Grady Jarrett up front, they have some guys. And ironically, since the bye week, they've been able to get after the quarterback. I think they have 16 sacks in the last 4 weeks. So something has turned the corner there with the guys up front. And now you feel a lot better about things, especially if the offense is moving the ball and keeping the defense off the field.
I'm glad you mentioned this pass rush, because there is one guy to me that I have circled. One of my boys actually went to school with him at Penn State. Arnold Ebiketie, man, is a guy that when he gets it going, he gets it going. He's got supreme burst and get off. What type of production has he given Atlanta this year? And do you feel like he's one of those guys up front that started to come on here within the past month or so?
So we talked to Raheem Morris on my show every week. And 5 weeks ago, ironically, during this losing streak, we were all saying, why the hell can't we get to the quarterback? What's going on? Why isn't AK, Arnold Ebiketie, why isn't AK getting to the quarterback? Why isn't Judon getting to the quarterback? What's happening? And Raheem Moore said, he has been our best pass rusher, and he's close. And all of a sudden now, over the last 4 weeks, you've seen this explosion of sacks. He is leading the way. You're absolutely right. And listen, sometimes it takes guys 2-3 years in this league to click, to get it, whether it's scheme, coaching, or just individually. Whatever it is, Arnold is getting it done right now, and I like his upside, and I loved him coming out of Penn State. I was high on him. A lot of people here in the A didn't know about him, didn't think he was going to be that dude, and then he's somewhat productive his first couple of seasons. And then last year he had six sacks, and everybody goes, all right, six is cool. Can you be a double-digit sack guy? And he's on his way to being that. So I think Arnold Ebiketie is a guy that is more than just a rotational player. He is a guy that ultimately is going to start getting some recognition around the league if things continue to trend in the way that they are.
Joined right now by our guy Carl Dukes. You can hear him Monday through Friday on 92.9 The Game in Atlanta, one of the absolute best, talking all things Falcons. I want to ask you about another guy on this Falcons defense that has really burst onto the scene, it feels like, here this season. Caden Ellis has been a tackling machine. Top 10 in the National Football League in tackles. Flies around to the football. Were you surprised at his level of production here? I know he's a former seventh-round pick, but it feels like this year, man, in this defense, we've seen him really reach that potential that we know he was capable of.
You know what's funny? First of all, let me say this. Caden Ellis is one of the most soulful people you'll meet.
Really? Okay. That surprises me, Dukes.
He is a really cool dude, but when you talk to him, you might think, you know, you're talking to a brother, just keeping it real.
No, that's real.
With that said, Caden Ellis is balling this year, and when he came over from New Orleans, you know, he followed his defensive coordinator, who's no longer here. because of the change at head coach with Arthur Smith. Mm-hmm. But we kind of figured, hey, he was a guy that got at the quarterback there. That's how they're going to try to use him here. And then, you know, again, things fell apart last year, and we don't have to revisit why Arthur Smith's no longer here. But I will say that as the season has progressed, he has gotten better every week. Yeah. And he has been one of the best defensive players on this team. And you're right. And I asked him this week, it's funny that you bring up Caden Ellis, because I said, yo, what's the change in the pass rush? And he said, I'll tell you after the season. I'm going to keep it close to the vest. Because he is more involved in it. And yeah, that is why he's like, look, I ain't sharing no secrets. People watch tape, they'll see what's going on. But I just don't want to tell the public, like, hey, here's the fundamental change, because there has been a change since the bye week. There's no debating it.
One thing that concerns me from Washington's point of view, Carl, going into this game is the rush defense, the rushing offense, rather. We'll get to the defense in a second. The rush offense for Washington has struggled, really going back to that second Giants game. It feels like when you remove the explosive runs, the one or two that they're having per game, Carl, out of the numbers, it's close to 2.93 yards a pop. We know Atlanta, despite the struggles in the pass game defensively, are top five in the National Football League in terms of yards allowed per rush. What has allowed Atlanta's rush defense to be good, and what type of problems does Washington present for that group, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, this has kind of been a bend-don't-break defense. They do a great job, you know, finding ways to get off the field when they need to. And it's funny because, you know, we talk about all the stats and the numbers, and you said it, sometimes they don't tell the story. I think they have found a way in critical moments in the game on third down, fourth and ones, fourth and twos, and teams are going for it, to find a way to get off the field. The run game, as far as the run defense is concerned, I would tell you it's progressively gotten better. I don't know if it's the strong suit of this team, and it's concerning going up against Washington. I actually think Jaden Daniels, with his escapability, is going to pose a problem on Sunday night.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that they're concerned about, with him picking up first downs and using his legs, and then just based off the run game that Washington has, if they want to come at the Falcons that way, I think they're going to have some success. I don't even think it's going to be an issue as far as Washington being able to move the ball on the ground and be effective. Now, does that change? And maybe Atlanta does something different defensively this weekend. We'll see what the game plan is. But I know teams have felt like they could. I've talked to multiple teams as we've gone through the season, and they all pretty much came in and said, we feel like we can run the ball. But a couple of these games, what happened was they didn't have to, because Atlanta turned it over, Cousins was throwing interceptions, and then all of a sudden you're sitting on a lead, and now, you know, they don't have to do the things that they thought they would. So we'll see how this game plays out, but I think that's going to be a big key on Sunday.
One thing that, from the Washington point of view, that we've been talking about a couple hours ago, the game statuses came out from Washington, and Marshawn Lattimore, their trade deadline acquisition from New Orleans, is going to be out with a hamstring injury that he's re-aggravated. Mm. Thought he played well last week in just his second game with Washington. There were a couple of penalties, but when you're going up against a receiver the caliber of A.J. Brown, you're going to have some swings and misses, so to speak. With what Washington has in the secondary, do the Falcons look at this as a game where maybe they can get right going up against a guy like Benjamin St. Juste?
If they allow Michael Penix to throw the ball.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they're going to. And don't misunderstand me here. He's going to have to throw the football. That's a given.
Right.
But are they going to take the reins off of Michael Penix and say, do you? Let me tell you, the kid can spin it, man.
Oh, we know.
I don't know how. He is as legit as advertised when you talk about what we saw at Washington, his deep ball, his accuracy. He's legit. But also, this is the second game of his career in the National Football League. And you're going up against a guy in Dan Quinn who is notorious for bringing pressure and getting guys off their game. So are they going to allow him to get into a rhythm and be able to throw the football like that to attack the guys you're talking about? I would love to see it. I just don't know if that's how the Falcons want to go about their business. Remember, they just want to make sure that they keep the confidence up in Michael Penix and that he is in a good place as they continue. This was not the plan. I know everybody loves it, and it's great that you had a backup, but this wasn't the plan. He was supposed to sit and chill, and he was learning and doing all the things, and he was doing everything they asked. Now you've been thrust into this, And everybody wants him to throw the ball 40 times and say, light it up like you did in college. And the Falcons are like, whoa, this is a little different. Yeah. And so I'm not sure to answer your question about that. But let me say this. If it's a shootout and Jaden and the Commanders get up, he is going to be forced to throw the ball, and we're going to see maybe some highlights.
Joining right now by our guy Carl Dukes, 92.9 The Game in Atlanta, one of the absolute best talking all things Falcons. I'll tell you what keeps me up at night and probably keeps Dan Quinn and Joe Witt Jr. up at night. That bad man in the backfield, 7, Bijan Robinson. Saquon Barkley's having a tremendous year out in Philadelphia, but I look at what Bijan Robinson's doing, turning runs that should be a loss of 2 into 5 and 6 yard gains. He is as special as they come at the position. 4 straight games over 90 yards. Getting him going is obviously going to be the key, Carl. I expect Washington to play a heavy box and say, hey, make Penix beat you. But what has been so special about Bijan Robinson?
Well, first of all, he is a tremendous person.
Yeah.
He is an amazing individual who puts team first, who is all about making sure that that he does the right thing every day. His work ethic is unprecedented. I could tell you multiple stories. You know, I was all about drafting him before the Falcons drafted him. I'm a Texas guy and saw Bijan. And you know, to say that he was special and what we were getting, people didn't understand why the hell you take a running back that early. And then, hell, go ask the Lions that question.
Right.
If you believe and you have conviction and you're picked and you know that that guy can change or help change your organization, you take him. It doesn't matter when the pick happens. And so now a lot of folks are over that, obviously, after seeing how special he can be. And to answer your question about, you know, his ability, listen, his quick twitch, his ability to make guys miss, and I'm talking about right here. You're in his face. You're in his face, and he's gone.
Yeah.
Like, that is special stuff. And you bring up Saquon, and I got to tell you, if it, you know, Saquon and certainly Derrick Henry don't want to disrespect the big fella. Mm-hmm. I get it. They're getting a lot of pub. But this kid is as good as those guys. And we're going to see that over the next 2 to 3 years where he becomes the premier running back, I believe, in the National Football League. He can do everything, and it's not me just pumping him up, and you know, but he can do everything that Christian McCaffrey can do, everything. And the part of this is this is his second year, and he didn't have a stable quarterback either last year. You know, again, we talk about the Desmond Ridder situation. So this year you get Cousins to start, you get some stability, he's starting to get his feet underneath him. And now I think he's feeling very comfortable. But this offense runs through Bijan. Do not be fooled.
Yeah, and the other thing I've been telling Commanders fans this week, man, they're a law firm talking about Robinson and Algier. Tyler's a guy that's a physical, dirty, nasty runner, whatever adjective you want to use to describe him. He runs behind his pads for sure. So I'm definitely concerned about him. Carl, you guys have Raheem on your show every week. And everybody that you talk to, man, just a stand-up individual, God-fearing man, and it's a dude that you would want to play for. I had him pretty high on my list here, Carl, as wanting him to come to D.C. I would have loved to have him here, but obviously we end up with DQ, and it's been damn good. But walk me through, I guess, your season of getting to talk to him on a week-in, week-out basis. How difficult do you think it was for them to say, hey, look, man, I know we dropped the bag for Cousins, but we got to make the postseason? How difficult was that for him to address the team and tell them that? And then more importantly, I know the team was probably okay with Arthur Blank. I look at Arthur and go, man, I know this is not what they signed up for. How hard do you think that was for that organization and him?
Well, I think when you are upfront and honest with your guys, and that's how you operate every day, and you come into the building and you know what you get every day. There's no different faces. There's no different attitude. There's no change. It's the same thing. I think there's a respect level that goes along with that where guys understand this is a business. And at the end of the day, I still have to do what's right for the football team. I can't get so caught up and be so inflexible that I can't make the right decisions for the team. And so I don't think it was hard. I think it had come to a head where everybody was going, yo, what are we going to do?
Yeah, it's like the elephant in the room at that point.
Yes. Why are we still not talking about it? And once that happened, I think it became very easy for him to have the conversation. When I'm not saying it was easy to tell Kirk Cousins. Yeah. That's never easy to tell a guy.
He's a stand-up dude, though. I know Kirk probably made it easy for him because he's a stand-up individual.
Correct. And I think, you know, once that conversation was had, everybody jumped on board. Because at the end of the day, man, and every team around the NFL, it doesn't matter what locker room you're in, everybody wants to win. Yeah. Everybody wants to win. And if that means, you know, major change like it has happened here this season, so be it. If it's minor change, okay. But I think once that decision was made, everybody's on the same page, and now we're rolling with it. You can't second guess and look back. And it's funny you bring up, you know, Raheem. To this week, I asked him about the magnitude of this game, and he said, you know, it's Sunday night. It's got a big feel. It's got playoff implications. He said, hey, we don't want to fabricate anything. Like, I'm not coming into the building and telling our guys, oh, by the way, we got a big Sunday night game. They're all big. And you know what? You take them that way. And that way, when you get into these situations, everybody's not freaking out. And when you run out of the tunnel, everybody's like, oh, it's a big game. They're all big. And so I thought that was interesting. And that's the point I'm talking about, where everybody's on the same page, moving in the same direction. But there's a respect level because he is the same dude every day. And I think that's important.
For sure, man. Consistency within that building is what's going to help build a long-term contender down in Hotlanta. Carl, we'll let you go by putting you on the hot seat, my friend. When we wake up Monday morning, will the Falcons have won the NFC South? And do you think they win on Sunday?
Now, listen, I do think they win. And wow. I know,
Carl, can I be honest, bro? Man?
I know it's a little biased.
You shocked me a little bit with that. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I know it may sound a little biased, but I do think they win. Yeah. But I will say this. That dude y'all got up there, you talk about wanting him. Yeah. Now, that was somebody we wanted. Because we knew we were in quarterback limbo, yeah. And we did not know that Cousins was going to be a part of this plan. But you talk about drafting Jaden Daniels. They got one. And I mentioned, you know, Cliff Kingsbury. I've known him for years. He went, you know, to school in Texas and all that. I'm telling you, he's doing an amazing job, and Jaden is off the charts right now. I love the way he's seeing the field and playing. I know it's his rookie season, and sky's the limit. But I will tell you this. To me, that is the only way that the Falcons don't win, is if he does the kind of things he did last week, and it comes down to the wire. I just feel like he's dangerous. And here's the deal for Washington. All those years and those games that they didn't win like last week, you are winning now. And you're winning because of that dude. And that is what scares me this week. But, yes, I feel like the Falcons go up there and handle business. They know how important this is. And listen, to have a three-game lead in this division, basically, and then blow it to Tampa Bay, after sweeping them in this division, it's going to be embarrassing if this team does not make the playoffs.
Strong words, Carl. Appreciate you giving us some time, as always, my brother. We got to do it again soon, man.
Hey, man, appreciate the love. Thank you. Keep grinding and put them up.
Look, I was about to ask, could you do it before you got out of here? But you did it anyway, my man. Carl Duke's one of the absolute best, ladies and gentlemen. Make sure you follow him on the old X app at Put 'Em Up Dukes. And make sure you check out his show, 92.9 The Game in Atlanta, Dukes and Bell, each and every day. You can check that out. Carl, appreciate you, my man.
Take care, bro.
Carl Dukes, ladies and gentlemen, he's electric. Man, I'll be honest with you, I'm a sports radio mark. Man, there was some Saturdays and Sundays rolling around the DMV area, maybe going running errands with my aunt or my uncle, and they turn the sports talk radio station on, and all you hear is, psh, psh, put them up! I mean, Carl Dukes, a staple in the radio industry. About an hour and a half left to go on the program, still a lot to get to. We will let you hear from the head coach of the Washington Commanders, Dan Quinn, but when we come back, I'll give you my three Commanders that must play big in order for Washington to pick up the big victory Sunday. That's next on The Fan. Big shout out to my guy Carl Dukes, man, one of the absolute best in the biz. Catch him Monday through Friday on 92.9 The Game in Atlanta. About an hour and change left to go here on this Friday night edition of Overtime. It's the youngest in charge, Linnell Willingham. I'll take you up to 10 o'clock. We'll let you hear from the head coach of the Washington Commanders, Dan Quinn, before we exit here tonight. But right now, I told you we'd get into the X's and O's a little bit. I'll give you my top three Commanders that must play big in order for Washington to get the victory against Atlanta. We'll take your calls on this too. 1-800-636-1067. Who needs to play well for Washington? I'm going to start with Brian Robinson. And I'm going to cheat a little bit, because I'm going to say Brian Robinson and the offensive line. We played the cut for you earlier. Cliff Kingsbury was pretty vocal about his displeasure in the way the offensive line has played the past couple of weeks. Overthinking. He called it, what did he say? Paralysis by analysis. They're simply not firing off the football and hitting people the way that we've been accustomed to seeing it. And Cliff is, for lack of better words, tired of it, man. He wants to see his group get back to that physical brand and physical style of football. And I agree with it. In order for that to happen, Brian Robinson and the offensive line, I'll be specific when I talk about the offensive line, because I think it's the interior three of Tyler Biadasz, Sam Cosmi, and Nick Allegretti. Those guys must play well. And I'll be real with you, right? Everybody loves Nick Allegretti because of how well he speaks to the media. Nick Allegretti, to me, is the weak link up front in this Commanders offensive line. And it shouldn't shock people when you consider the fact this is first time being a full-time starter in the National Football League. I go back to the game against New Orleans. You got Michael Dieter in there. Hadn't started this year, but has been a veteran that's played a lot of ball in this league. You needed your guards to play really well and above, punch above their weight class, so to speak, to help out your backup center. And Brian Brisee and John Ridgeway whipped Nick Allegretti's ass and Mike Dieter's ass all game long. All game long. So much so that Jayden Daniels had to play Superman. And, you know, they narrowly got out of there with a win. It's going to be the same situation this weekend against Atlanta. There aren't a bunch of household names in that front for the Falcons, but there are two guys that I really circle and go, yeah, they can't let them wreck things. Matthew Judon was a big-time acquisition via trade this offseason. Thing I love about Judon is you'll see Judon on the edge. You'll see Judon lined up on the interior. And he is one of those penetrating type of defensive linemen that give Washington trouble. Grady Jarrett's another guy I look at that's got inside-outside pass rush versatility. Those penetrating, quick-twitch defensive linemen is really what gives Washington trouble in the run game, and Atlanta's got that. So I look at B-Rob in the interior three of the offensive line in terms of the first person out of the three, and I know I cheated, it's my game, that have to play well for Washington to win. The other young man I'm going to go with, and I think it's very clear that the success of this team hinges upon his ability to man up, put the noise to the side, and go play good football. Benjamin St. Juste, he has to play well this week because he's going to be on an island. Because I guess the game plan for Washington and how they attack Atlanta will kind of give you an idea into their level of trust with their guys on the perimeter. When I say guys on the perimeter, so to speak, you know I'm referring to Benjamin St. Juste, because you know they trust Mikey Samuels still. In terms of, and maybe I'm hyperbolizing this, in terms of like the best value signings in the NFL this free agency, how is Noah Igbinoghene not near the top of your list? For as well as he's played this year, based on the contract he has, good Lord, you've got a lot out of him. So your cornerbacks are all going to be under the microscope. It's a tough group. Ray McLeod's got speed. Any of my real ride-or-die Commander fans, Ray McLeod really ruined our season, man. I remember it was when Carson Wentz was still here, running around with concrete in his ankles. That game on the road at San Francisco, Washington was punching tooth and nail with that group. It was 2022, I believe. Washington going back and forth, scratching tooth and nail against San Fran on the road. And that Ray McLeod end-around touchdown really bust things open in that game. And it was one of the backbreaking touchdowns. But he's a part of that receiving core. Darnell Mooney actually having a tremendous year for Atlanta. He's a guy that, you know, can make you miss in a phone booth. He's got real good, quick twitch ability. He's on pace for 1,000 yards. He's got 5 touchdowns. They got to worry about him. And they got to worry about Drake London. But I feel like, maybe I'm wrong with this, when Marshon Lattimore was playing against New Orleans, where did Jake Haener, where did Spencer Rattler go with the football? They went opposite of Marshon to Benjamin St. Juice. Now that your outside guys are projected to be Sandra Still and Juice, I would have to think if you're an opposing offense, you're more inclined to throw at Juice than you are Mikey Sandra Still. So I think St. Juice is going to have his hands full. I don't want to say I think he holds his own. I think he'll be fine out there. I have concerns. I have doubts. There are reservations that I have built up. I just am a firm believer, based on the way we saw him coach last week, and maybe the confidence level is different with this group because there's no Lattimore. Joe Witt Jr. blitzed the hell out of Kenny Pickett a week ago. And I have to think that is the recipe for them to slow down Michael Penix. And, excuse me, to slow down Bijan Robinson. So Michael Penix is going to see a lot of man-to-man coverage, and it's going to be up to the defensive backs to be physical at the line of scrimmage and not let the guys win quick. A third and final guy that's got to step up and play big in order for Washington to pick up the victory Sunday. It's pretty easy. Jaden Daniels. Or Himothy Daniels, as some of you all have been calling him. Falcons have given up the most passing touchdowns in the National Football League. They play that match zone similarly to how Vic Fangio's defense played it last week in Philadelphia, except they don't have the horses to run it. I think Jaden's been phenomenal this year against zone coverage. He knows how to get the football out of his hands. When he gets to the top of his drop, it's either out or he's taken off and running. He's going to need to play with that conviction, so to speak, Sunday if Washington's going to have a shot. I personally think if you're a fantasy football guy, and I think fantasy sports is dumb, I know that may tick some people off. I'm not a fan of fantasy football. What other quarterback this week in the NFL would you want to start other than Jaden Daniels? When you consider the matchups, right? When you consider the matchups, who else would you rather start? I think Jaden Daniels is going to have a big game. We'll take your calls on this. 1-800-636-1067. Which commander needs to step up Sunday in order for them to have a real shot to beat the Atlanta Falcons? We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, when we come back, we'll get interesting. I want to let you hear from Bryant McFadden of CBSSports.com. Had a pretty interesting comparison for the young pup, Jaden Daniels. Let's hear from Bryant McFadden next. Yes, indeed. He's still moving and grooving right along as we're on a mad dash to 10 o'clock here on Overtime. It's the youngest of Charles and L. Willingham. You keep the conversation going with me on social media. It is at N-E-L-L underscore BTP. Get you an official prediction for Falcons and Commanders coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. But right now, well, let's hear from CBS sports analyst Bryant McFadden, who had this to say about Commanders rookie signal caller, Jaden Daniels.
Jaden Daniels is the JV Lamar Jackson.
Okay.
Lamar is the varsity guy. Jaden Daniels is the guy right now watching Lamar on Fridays. Because you look at his style of play and how he's doing things in such an early part in his career.
Yeah.
As he continues to grow in the National Football League, he is Lamar Jackson, but the JV version. And eventually he will become that varsity version. And you better look out, NFC East.
I'm McFadden with words that, honestly, on first blush, when I read the headline and the caption, I went, huh? What a slap in the face to the young phenom, Himothy Daniels, as some of you folks like to call. I think it's a damn good name, by the way. I understand what B-Mac was saying. but it's still disrespectful for this reason. Jaden Daniels is his own man at the quarterback position. And it feels like from day one, we knew this kid had a shot to be special. And here's why. Every time I talk about Jaden Daniels, every time folks talk about Jaden Daniels, you don't rave about the arm talent. You don't rave about the ability to throw the deep ball. You don't rave about how elusive he is. It's the number one thing they talk about when they talk about Jaden Daniels is what type of hard worker he is. First guy in the building, last guy to leave. And I've said it all season long, man. I'll be real. I kind of rolled my eyes, right? I kind of rolled my eyes during the offseason when we were hearing about, oh, Jaden Daniels is showing up to the facility at 5:15. Him and Luke McCaffrey are doing walkthroughs together. I rolled my eyes because guess what? I've heard that before. It's the media's job. It's the coach's job to talk up the work ethic of the quarterback. The thing that's beautiful about JD5, you see it week in and week out. The reason he's performing so well, you're seeing him benefit from the fruits of his labor. He works his ass off. That's why week in and week out, this young man is prepared. He knows where to go with the football. And he's got supreme confidence that we haven't seen here in Washington under center in a very, very long time. Speaking of the importance level, right, of Jaden Daniels' work ethic, I said it leading up to the Philadelphia game. I gave him a 30% chance to win. But I knew this offense would take a seismic step forward because of this. You are on a short week, and you had limited time to prepare for Philadelphia the first time. And Cliff Kingsbury even came out and admitted, hey, look, maybe I installed too much for this group on a short week. I think it makes a ton of sense. You do not want to overload the plate of your guys on a short week because anyone who's played understands, hey, look, when you know what you're doing, you play fast. You have no doubts, and you go out and fly around. I think we saw that from Washington on Sunday. We didn't see it from them in that first matchup between Washington and Philadelphia. For this weekend, though, full week to prep. Not only did they get a full week of prep, this is Jaden Daniels' first time playing on Sunday Night Football, right? If I'm not mistaken, this is Washington's first Sunday night game of the year. You know what's amazing about Sunday Night Football and playing on Sunday Night Football? You have all day long to watch tape. So if you don't think Jaden Daniels is going to be watching tape up to the kickoff, then you don't know JD5. You just don't know 5. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. You can tweet at me as well. It's at NELL_BTP. Youngest in charge, Linnell Willingham. Taking you up to 10 o'clock. We'll take a quick pause, pay some bills, let you hear some commercials. When we come back, final hour of power here on this Friday night edition of Overtime, I'll give you my official prediction for Commanders and Falcons coming up next on The Fan.